Hello, this is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
I hopped off the plane at LAX with a dream, my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame, excess. Am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. Look to my right and I see the Hollywood sign. This is all so crazy. Everybody seems so famous. My tummy's turning and I'm feeling kinda homesick. Too much pressure and I'm nervous. It's when the taxi man turned on the radio and the Jay-Z song was on. And the Jay-Z song was on. And the Jay-Z song was on. So I put my hands up to play my song. The butterflies fly away. I'm nodding in my head like yeah. Moving my hips like yeah. Got my hands up to play my song. You know I'm gonna be okay. Yeah. It's a party in the USA. Yeah. It's a party in the USA.
Hi everyone. This is an episode of Another Teen Wolf Podcast. It's Natalie. You probably can't tell that because I sound like I'm losing my voice. It's a week before BiteCon and it's Thursday and it's literally the first day that all of this podcast has been in the same room at the same time. And this is a surprise for you all. We are all right now in the conference room at Teen Wolf at the headquarters, set, etc. We've had a set tour and we've had, you know, some time meeting a lot of people on the show. And we're going to see who comes in to talk to us for the rest of the podcast. But we also want to talk a bit about what we got to see on set today and who we got to hang out with and all of that. So we have Donya, Courtney, Brooke, Karen and me all in the same room. Karen and I are very sick from going to New York together. But so I'm going to let Donya talk for a while now.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fun with this. It was great. We had a nice drive over. Courtney was very, very good and drove us over in a van.
Louisiana driving is not Los Angeles driving.
Yeah, and we got to wander around. We got to see a lot of stuff. It's been really good.
So what was everyone's favorite thing that you saw today? Karen?
Is it? Oh, go ahead.
God, you put me on the spot. I don't know.
Karen's sick.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like everything is like a blur and I don't remember anything right now.
Yeah. We got to see a lot of the best like sets, like, you know, the whole thing. They're not on a, you know, they've got their own sound stages out on their location. They're not in a, you know, like Fox lot or Paramount lot. And so we got to see like all of their, like how all the stages fit together, like bits of the school and the hospital, like even like, the, you know, the front entrance is the hospital and they use every bit of space they have, which is the same as inside studios I've been to. Even places that are like a public walkway, they can make a scene. They do the same thing here and it's really, really cool. But we got to see a lot of the actors walking around.
I really liked hanging out in Derek's loft.
Yeah, Derek's loft. They turned on the lights. We didn't get to go inside a lot of the sets. We sort of got to look at the doors of the classrooms and locker room I saw into. And we went through the morgue as well. That was cool.
That was fun for me. That was my favorite. I think that was the first
moment
when you walk in and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Guys. And so that was, you know, that sticks out for me.
Yeah, Derek's loft was my favorite set that we saw. So
it was really nice to see the sheriff's office as well. I liked that. That was great.
Yeah,
I think my favorite part about Derek's loft was, like, the bricks. And, you know, they were showing us that they're not real, but, like, you can't tell. Like, even up close, unless you touch them, you're like, no, this stuff is all real and they built this, but it's all like paint.
Yeah.
I think the other really cool thing about Derek's loft was that Rusty, who does a lot of the pre-production stuff, he actually, that was his first set.
Project.
Like his first proper project that had like ceilings and everything. So it's a fully realized room. And when he built it, he did a lot of extra stuff. So in the episode where they actually flood Derek's loft, that when they went to him with that and said, oh, we need to put like a couple of inches of water in here, he said, oh yeah, no problem, I've made this whole thing waterproof, you can actually fill it up, it's not a problem, I just did that in case you wanted to flood it at any point. And it's like,
chill,
you know,
whatever.
You know, whatever, yeah, you can flood this this set, this is cool. So that for me was pretty awesome as well, to think that he just added that in without really knowing where they were going. Yeah, he had the foresight. This guy is amazing. Yeah. Like, his pre-production
sketches. Yeah, we saw a lot of sketches all over the offices of all of the drawings he does of how they want scenes to look and all of that kind of stuff. We saw some mock-ups. We saw a big piece of the Nebaton, which was hand-carved out of polystyrene and then painted, so that was fun.
I think it was sealed and that was in hard as well.
Six pieces, like,
yeah. So the big.
The Nebaton is huge. Yeah. The one piece of the Nebaton was bigger than I am, so...
But that's not hard to...
Thanks, bros.
Yeah, Donya's really short, by the way, just so you all know. But yeah, and then we got to... I mean, we weren't, like, spoilerific about, like, anything. You know, the scenes they were doing, but we got to meet Lyndon and Matthew Del Negro, and we got to see Orny Adams and Tyler Hoechlin and J.R. Bourne, one of the new kids, Dylan Sprayberry, and Jeff. So everyone was super nice. Like, everyone, the vibe here is, like, legitimately so chill and, like, everyone's so happy to be here. We talked to so many different people who work in, like, costuming and, like, all sorts of stuff, and it was cool. They were like, here, have some catering and just, like, hang out. And, like, we've been here for, like, 6 hours. Like, it's, like, it's just been really, like,
amazing.
We're never at home.
Yeah, we live here now, apparently. Just the atmosphere here is very
nice,
and I don't want to say calm because they probably work very hard and get very stressed in the middle of the nights, but, like, it's not, like, it's not angry or stressful, and, like, it's, like, everyone's really happy to be working with each other and happy.
Puppies and kids running around.
Oh, yeah, we met a dog. That was cool. Like, we met a puppy.
If you follow the Teen Wolf production Tumblr, it's the rescue puppy that they talked about. I think it was, like, a couple of weeks ago, right? It's
Indy?
Yeah, Indy, the puppy, is doing very well. And we got to meet Indy. Actually, Indy met us as in Indy... kind of clocked us in the conference room and came over.
Yeah.
So
she's not hard to take us off.
Yeah.
And it was just all very, very fun. And what else could we say? Like,
I think Jen.
Jen Lynch. Like, yeah, Jen Lynch, who directed Silverfinger, is directing 2 episodes the next season. We met her today and saw her directing a scene between JR and Tyler Hoechlin, which we are allowed to say, and it's on a new set, which we're not allowed to say what it is, but we just saw the whole style of her directing, which was really funny, and, like it was, we won't say what it is, but it was a very repetitive close-up, and just the, like, the pedanticness and the kind of the different, I didn't know there were so many different ways you could do this one thing, if you know what I mean, like,
And then her complaints about there being a strand of hair on this prop, and it kept multiplying. It's
She's like, this is too hairy now. Which was fantastic. Like, she was great. It was really nice to see, like, the style in which she was directing them with.
Yeah the way she talked to them and stuff was really, like, energetic and, like, cool. Like, that was,
and also very personable. I think that was really nice to see, that it seems like everyone's so close, and as we were, like, going through the set, everyone made a point of, like, saying hello.
And
it was like being at Disneyland on my birthday. Like, right, we went to Disneyland and it's my birthday next week, and they made me get the birthday button. Every cast member at Disney was like, happy birthday. Oh, yeah, happy birthday. And this was like this today. Everyone was, like, so nice when they saw us. And I don't know if they're just, like, always that nice to people, or if they'd been, like, bribed or something. Like, but it was really cool. And we have some photos to show you of what we're allowed to. We saw a lot of the costumes, a lot of, like, they have a rack of, like, the favorite costumes that they've kept from past episodes. What did you guys like from that?
The Oni one.
Yeah, the Oni costume.
The Oni costume was amazing. I love that it was green leather that they painted.
They couldn't find the right kind of black leather, and so they got a green leather and they dyed it.
Oh, it was amazing.
They also
just
had
detail on that was, that costume just, if we ever, like, whenever, like, the HD stuff comes out, I would love to just, like, really zoom in on that.
Yeah.
Just to see all the details again, because it was just so good.
And they had a Scott's track jacket that he got the bite in, like, the before and after. Like, that was kind
of... We're big fans of that one, apparently.
That was kind of cool.
The books, the binders, got for each episode with the photos of all the outfits and the jewelry and just everything. That was... They showed us one of the books, and that was amazing.
It's a photo for every single costume change. And the change may just be that, like, in one scene, Lydia's not wearing a ring, and then she may be wearing a ring a little bit later on, but the same outfit, and they have to re-photograph it. Just to make sure that, like, the continuity is there with the outfits themselves. Mm-hmm. And, like, the tatters on, like, Derek's shirt when he gets horribly, horribly hurt, to make sure that they're in the same place.
Yeah. I actually really liked Cully's jacket that she died in, which is so morbid. But, I mean, they were like, yeah, we removed all the glass, but, like, you could still see some of the blood on the side. And, like,
a lot of blood on stuff.
Yeah, like, everything had blood on it.
Blood on the floor,
and we saw Styles's tie and white shirt prom.
Yeah, from the
and Allison's dress, and yeah, there's a lot of really cool things there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else did we see that we could talk about?
The lunch. Where they have lunch outside.
Yeah, the exterior of Beacon Hills High, like the sign and the
tables.
You know, and like we walked from one lot to the other, that was like the lot where like Styles was like they found Styles lying down and when Lydia was driving the car with Aiden. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I was gonna say though, one of the cool things is they use everything that they make. So the lunch tables, the crew actually eats out there. They'll actually sit at the lunch tables and just have lunch or whatever. That's just so awesome. It's so multi-purpose. I love it.
It was fun. It was good.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then we had some interviews.
And we got to chat with some of the writers, which you'll hear in a minute, in the conference room. We got to chat with Ian Stokes, Alyssa Clark, and
Angela L. Harvey,
who are all on the writing team. And we got to chat for a while about, like, their collaborations and like how the shows run and some little nitty gritty questions. We probably could have talked for like 12 hours, whatever. Where's Karen and I are like losing our voices and it's all like they've got to kick us out sometime, but yeah. Sorry, this is probably good. I don't really have time to edit this thoroughly, so you're probably going to hear a lot of coughing, so sorry about that, but you're getting our real experience and it was very exciting. And it was like even JR and Hecklin were shooting their scene and, like, they, you know, took time to, like, drink in the turnaround of the scene, like, you know, shooting it from a different angle. They came out. Like, they went past us a few times to get on in and off the set, and they kind of, like, we were kind of like, oh, look, there they are. But then they came out and just, like, talked to us for, like, 20 minutes or something, just, like, hanging out. And, like, that was very surreal and cool. And, like, everyone, all of the cast were like, oh, it's so nice. Like, thank you for, you know, like, to the fandom and all of that. It was, like... Yeah.
Yeah.
The amount of appreciation these guys have for the fandom is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to walk through the gallery.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we got to see the fan art. It's so pretty.
Guys, your fan art up in this gallery is the most awesome thing.
It looks so professional and nice, and it's like it's so legit, and it's really cool. And like,
it has to give them inspiration.
Yeah.
Knowing that I am and knowing that they have your support.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've inspired you guys to make things like this. So it's a full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know what else to say. We'll probably think of some other stuff. We'll probably be, like, remembering this for the rest of our lives and, like, be like, that happened when we were on set. But, like, yeah, it was very, very... I want to say last minute. We've been planning it for about 9 months, but it ended up still being totally last minute. So, yeah, very, very big thanks to everyone at MTV who kind of
made
that happen and being so welcoming to us, because this is the first time we've obviously all been able to gather. So that's been exciting.
Yeah.
Courtney was very excited to meet Tyler Hoechlin.
Thanks, we're going to publish this on air, aren't we? Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And Jeff was also very excited to see Karen.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird because, like, I hate, like, saying this because it sounds really braggy, but, like, some of them were like, oh, yeah, we know you. And, like, Jeff as soon as he heard me, he was like, I recognize your voice. And then he saw Karen, he's like, and I know you, and like hugs Karen because he's met her at a lot of interviews.
Karen's
and
hiding her face right now.
Karen's totally embarrassed.
Stop it.
I know, that was very overwhelming and weird to think that like they're that aware of the fandom. So like, you know, be careful, guys. but it was cool. Like, it was so nice. And he was like, yeah, so open and welcoming and like really chill. And that was cool. Yeah.
He's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know what else to say right now.
Yeah.
Has anyone got anything to say before we go into the interviews?
We hope you guys enjoyed listening as much as we enjoyed
talking.
Yeah. Yeah, and everyone have fun at BikeCon, I guess, if we see you there. If we don't, hopefully we'll be able to get some good stuff from that as well. And hopefully we met a lot of people today that might want to come on the show in future and talk costume. Barbara Vasquez, who's the head of the costume,
was so cool.
And, like, we were talking to her. We were just like, I wish I'd got a microphone up and was, like, recording that conversation because she was, like, we were talking about, like, you know, the different ways you could style a character, like, to show, like, their insecurities, like, purposely get clothes that don't fit properly and, like, all of that kind of thing. And, like, the idea of, like, you know, re-wearing outfits because they're, like, real teenagers who don't have, like, new outfits from, like, you know, wherever, like, designer stuff every week and, like, purposefully reusing stuff and, like, making it look worn in and, like, laundering it and all of that. It was, like, super fascinating to me. So I would love to have her on at some point.
That would be amazing because she's so funny as well.
She was really funny. She's so great. Yeah, we heard a lot about, like, on-set life and stuff, which was all cool. Like, and everyone's friends. It's so, like, unprofessional in a good way.
Yeah.
I don't mean that in, like they're unprofessional. It's not unprofessional at all. Like, very...
It's professional, but relaxed.
Yeah, it's so, like, cool, like, and genuinely...
supportive.
Like, friendly and chill and funny and, I don't know, it's... Yeah, it's kind of, you know, we didn't... Yeah, everything we hoped and more, really.
Yeah,
it's a really good show to fall in love with.
Yeah. Good job, guys.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was the interviews with the three writers that we got to meet who are all very cool and energetic and funny and irreverent. And it's clearly a very, very fun team, very young team, very mixed group of people. And it's a lot of opportunities. Like, everyone here seems to be given a lot of opportunities, and like, in a really personal manner, which is really cool. So, hope you liked that and hope we're able to hear more from the set in future if they ever, you know, want to come on the show again at some point. We've left them a bunch of our cards, so, So we have Ian Stokes here.
Hey.
Internet, hi. He's one of the writers for Teen Wolf. Do you want to kind of tell the internet a little bit about, like, your position in the writing staff and how it works, like, with a group of writers?
I'm the producer, writer. I started in 3B. Me and Jeff and our other staff writers, we sit around a room and we write the scripts and then we go to set and watch them be filmed.
Fair enough.
It is that exciting.
Yeah, boring.
Look at the internet a lot. We watch a lot of YouTube videos. We talk about our favorite movies and then we're like, hey, can we do that? And then we do that.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. We saw a lot of the, art boards and the kind of storyboards and like stuff that's like mood boards or like from other films like you have here and stuff. So like,
well, that's all our production stuff.
Yeah.
Our production, the people here, we moved the show. I wasn't on the show when we were in Atlanta.
Yeah.
The show moved from Atlanta to LA and it had to sort of had to redefine its visual look. Mm-hmm. Russell Mulcahy directed the pilot and he also directed the first episode of season 3, which was the first LA episode.
Yeah.
And I think you can sort of see the difference in the show when we went to LA.
It's an upgrade.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I was on this show before that called Warehouse 13. We shot in Toronto. And I love the Canadians, but it's the best crews anywhere are in LA. If you shoot in LA, that's why your show looks better. Mm-hmm. And so we have people who have worked in features, and our stunt guys are they do all the Spider-Mans and the Marvel movies. Rusty Smith is our production designer, and he comes up with just amazing stuff. Our crews are the happiest people I know because they get to work in where they live in LA. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see all this art all over the board. This is our inspirations. I guess you guys are looking at some spoilers here.
Yeah, we're not taking pictures in this room or anything.
Well, you can see a lot of Indiana Jones temple stuff on the wall, and
that's true.
I'm sure it's all over the internet that our premiere takes place in Mexico.
Yeah, that's known that about. That.
So it's a big road adventure. We kind of wanted to do. Jeff and I had sort of talked at the end of last season about doing our premiere like it's kind of like the opening of Return of the Jedi with Jabba the Hutt, but there's no Jabba. but it's a big, crazy adventure in Mexico, and we're really excited about it. We've seen a rough cut. It's shaping up very nicely. And so another thing about the show is it's harder to do locations than it was in Atlanta. So we knew if we were going to do a big road show, it'd be better to do it at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Are you texting?
No.
I'm just talking. I'm very fascinated.
I'm pulling up the episode guide to talk about who wrote which episode, actually. but yeah, that's something I was saying to Matt earlier about the start of the, I'm like, I want this episode to be like 50% people bickering in the backseat of the car. Like, that's what I want from
it. We did a lot of car stuff. And the best part about it's called Poor Man's Process. And so what it is you'll see there's a lot of talky stuff in the car in the first episode. We got everybody in the Jeep.
That's great.
And so what it is just it looks like they're moving, and it's just a green screen, and then a set guy with a big, like, 2x4 under the tires, like, jumping on it so the thing looks like it's shaking. But, you know, you'll it's movie magic, you'll see.
Yeah. And so I was curious about, like, how many people are on the writing
last year
team?
It was – we had about – five. It was me, Jeff, Christian, Moira, Owen, and Angela and Alyssa.
Yeah.
We all came at different times. And this year it's me. Christian's going to do Eye Candy on MTV. Very exciting.
I was
going
to ask about that. What that meant for him. Yeah.
He's the big cheese at this other show on MTV that'll be on, I guess, January.
Is it going to be Unsolved now?
On what?
Is it going to be like Unsolved?
Consult with us. He directed episode 2 of this year.
Okay. Oh, cool.
But that's it. And Christian, I'll miss him, but every day I would come in and he would take my parking sign down and throw it in the dirt. And I always just thought, man, this thing is falling down. And then one day I came in at the right time and I saw Christian just pulls up next to me and goes over and kicks my sign down.
So you weren't missing that much.
What a dick. Yeah. And so when he left, I took his parking sign and threw it in the garbage and took a picture of it.
Yeah.
No, but he's a good guy. So he directed episode 2. So, but that was his last. And he's been hanging out here.
Yeah.
But now he's gathering his own writing room for his show, which I think he'll start shooting at the end of this year.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, my thing is as well, like, you guys have like a team and you sit around, you work out stories, episodes together. How much, like, sort of, is it, when an episode title comes up, it'll say written by Jeff Davis, written by Ian Stokes, written by Christian Taylor. Like, what is it that makes an episode like yours in particular? If you know what I mean, do you come away and bring the idea yourself?
No, I mean, really, we tend to just collaborate, and some of the credits are they. We always that always the person who does the first draft. But when we tend to collaborate everything, and it's sort of weird because I know to the outsider, like the Emmys, right? The Emmys will do the best writing, best script of the year. That'll be best writing in a dramatic series or something. And it'll be like 4 Mad Men episodes, you know, and then someone will go up and get it. But when you're in a writer's room, we all collaborate and we write together. So it's super weird.
Yeah.
That's Alyssa and Angela just
walked
in. Hi.
Take a seat.
The ladies of the Teen Wolf writer's room.
Cool.
Lady writers.
The lady writers.
We like lady writers.
But they're always like, when we make a joke or something on the script, we're like, is this sexist? I have to look at Alyssa
and half the time it is.
Half the time it is. Nice. And then we're like, take it out.
Like, if you're asking that question, you already know the answer.
Yeah.
But like, so for last season, 3B, because I won't go into 4, the way it worked is we would all gather. We have about 8 weeks of prep before we start shooting. So we all sit down. We sort of plot out the entirety of the season. We try to roadmap it. And so we come up with the overall, we had all the stuff about. We knew Kira was coming into town and her mother and the internment camp and the Nogitsune, and we had all these details, and we plotted out the entire mystery, basically. And then it just came a matter of, well, okay, well, what happens in every episode? So we knew, like, certain landmarks. Like, we knew about Because I think my credit is episode 10 as the...
Fox and the Wolf, right?
Or 9 or whatever it is. The one with the internment camp episode. Yeah. So that was one that...
Yeah, we never know the title. So
yeah, I know.
That's why I pulled it up. That's why I was on my phone. Yeah.
So, you know, as a group, we all try to figure out the map of the season before we get started, or at least what certain signposts are going to be. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of... It's like... Because every season, Jeff's deal is... The way he wants to run this show is every 12 episodes is a sequel to a movie. The sequel to the next movie.
Yeah.
So that's why we don't have... We do have ongoing storylines and stuff, but we tend to try to wrap up as much as we can in episode 12, even though we know we're not going to be canceled. So I don't know why we just don't keep going. But for some reason, that's the way we do it. But I think it's also very satisfying for the audience, and I think that's a new way of doing TV, especially with like American Horror Story and True Detective, where you feel satisfied at the end of 12.
If we didn't wrap stuff up, we would be more insane than we already are.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to complete a full sentence now.
It'd probably be like Styles is bored with all of the like string coming up everywhere.
We'd definitely be wandering in the dark.
Oh, the board comes back this year too. Symbolically took it down.
But. Yeah.
I liked the symbolically taking it down. I thought that was nice.
It was nice, but then we had another mystery.
Oh, but is this like a crazy person board, or is this like a legitimate board?
Well, I will say, Styles is no longer... Some people are asking us, like, when's the Nogitsune coming back? And we're like, never.
Nogitsune
was crazy enough for one season. Like, he's not coming back. He's in a box.
Yeah.
It's definitely a deliberate choice to put the board back up and kind of process a new mystery.
Yeah, cool.
This season's super cool, guys.
I believe you.
Yeah,
it's not as dark as season 3B.
I think we need a breather.
Well,
but
it's
a lot funnier. There's a lot of old school season 1 and 2 humor in there. Huge body count, though, always.
It's not your idea of dark. I mean, you know, ripping bodies.
We're running out of a lot of, we need a lot of decapitated prop corpses this season.
Yeah.
Cool.
But,
seems nice.
Other than that, it's a... We're about halfway through shooting now.
I mean, I feel like having the villain as one of the, like, lead characters who already existed is, like, you can't... If you keep trying to top that, like, if you keep trying to go a level up from that, it's going to get ridiculous. So, yeah, I think everyone was kind of relieved to bring it down a little bit for season 4. I shouldn't be talking this much because I'm losing my voice. Do you guys want to ask anything about...
I think going off the back of that, I think it's really nice to ramp it back down and go back to almost the roots, which it seems like, from what we've seen so far, it seems to be going back to, like, the core relationships again. I think that's really nice, especially with the fallout from Allison.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be really nice to see.
One of the things about going back to basics is Jeff... really wanted to do, and I kind of wanted to do too, is a simple, the first season's who is the alpha? And so it's this ongoing mystery, and you're waiting, like any good mystery, like Scream or anything else, where you're waiting for that killer to be unmasked. And it worked great in 2, and it worked even better in 3 with the Duroc, and we got a good one this season too. So it's a pretty, nothing simple on Teen Wolf. It's a little less, it's simpler than, we probably won't be flashbacking to World War II.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
Because that episode nearly killed, I don't know how I think we're still trying to pay for it, but.
It was beautifully done. Is that something that you always, like, and as you said, that's your top, like, that's your credit on that one. Is it like you guys have the idea of the whole season, then everyone's like, okay, so I'll do the first draft of this one, does it just sort of.
The whole thing was like, really, the Internment Camp episode was like, up until the moment we were breaking it, we're like, should we be doing this? And it wasn't about the subject matter necessarily. It was more about the fact that, like, we're going to try to do a World War II flashback episode on an MTV budget. And we're also going to do this very... It's a little cheese balls to do the thing. Oh, my mother looks just like me when she was immortal with Kira. But the other thing that we were worried about was we're obviously a little bit ahead. We hadn't seen a lot of Arden yet, and so we were very worried about, is Arden the person who can carry an episode so soon? And she totally was.
Yeah.
She was amazing. And also another person is Tamlin, Tamlin Tamiko, who plays Kira's mom.
Yeah.
Who, if Eric comes in here, Eric worked with her on Eureka. She just blew us all away. She sold the hell out of that telling of that story. And
yeah.
She's awesome. The first time we worked with Tamlin, it was the sushi dinner scene.
Nice.
And so we shot it actually from, like, I'm going to say, like, 8 p.m. to, like, 4 a.m. or something at this house, and I don't know where we were. And so we hadn't met Tamlin yet. She just comes in. I think she just who knows if she'd ever seen the show. I doubt it. She's just an L.A.-based actress, and she's just like, we're trying to explain to her, like, we think you might know Scott as a werewolf because you might be 1,000 years old. And she's like, what is this show? What is going on? But right away, she had this thing where we put out the sushi, and she told us that the table was dressed all wrong for a Japanese sushi dinner. She's like, Craig, like, no, the chopsticks need to go over here, and the tea should be here. Right. And, like, the production's crew is looking at us like, should we do this? And, like, we're like, she's scaring us. Like, do it. Like, she's Mrs. Yukimura. She's the character we wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
The internment camp episode.
We barely know what you're talking about. Yeah. Did anyone mention that Princess Leia and a jester is in the season?
Oh, well, you know, good to know. That will be a great spoiler for the internet. So.
I don't know what the hell is happening in this picture. But.
Yeah.
I've been trying to give props to set design for a minute, ever since we started talking about internment camp. Like, walking on those sets was the most amazing thing for me.
Yeah, Rusty is.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
And then there was like this level. There were some high shots that were taken, but there were like these stairs that we could walk down at that.
Yeah, San Pedro. It's a military base called Fort MacArthur.
Yeah. It was gorgeous.
It was freezing, but it was pretty cool. And then we went back there because that's where we killed Els. Final ninja battle.
Yeah, it was really beautifully done. And then we had also, what episodes do we have this season that you did the Illuminated, right?
Which I loved.
Wait, is that the...
That's my party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, again, like, was that something that, like we heard that sort of that idea came from Jeff having gone to one of those parties and just wanting to put it on film? Is like...
Jeff probably lives at those
parties. Is that like...
that's like every Thursday night.
That's kind of what we originally heard. It's just a funny, thing to say, with the overarching story and, you know, then writing an episode, having... a weird idea. Like, what's the weirdest idea to kind of have to guide a storyline around, if you know what I mean?
The weirdest idea I think we've had? Is that what you want to know? Because it wasn't mine.
Well, was the Illuminated your idea? Or,
No, most of these things are a collaboration of ideas. Mm-hmm. Like, we all have something we know was ours.
Yeah.
Like, I remember finding the kanji for self. That was, like, a big... I was really pleased that I found that. I was looking for a simplified kanji, truthfully. Mm-hmm. I'd studied a little bit of Japanese, not enough to know anything, but to know where to look, and I was just looking through them, and I'm like, that's way too complicated, that's way too complicated, that's way too complicated, and then I found it, and I was like, oh, and Jeff loves, like, little things where people would think it was a 5, because that's what people thought. Mm-hmm. Somebody got it, though, ahead of time. I said it on that After Buzz. I loved reading everyone's theories, and somebody wrote...
I think we had it.
It might have been you guys.
We did an episode about the Japanese mythology because her friend is a Japanese scholar.
Yeah, my friend Jen.
Sorry about that. I gave you a shout out on AfterBuzz about that. I was like the week after that happened.
So I know, I don't think we had the specific translation, but
we had something very close.
About it being
self.
What's the weirdest idea, though?
Just something, it's like, oh, we want to put this in an episode. How are we going to make this a logical part of the plot? Like,
I don't know. The weirdest idea is still the claws in the box. Owen's idea with the claws in the box. Yeah.
Really? I was going to say Styles puking himself up.
Oh.
That turned my stomach.
That's just awesome, though. Like, claws in the box, I still...
But that's kind of part of the plot as well. It's more like, obviously, Illuminated is like a visual thing, and it was like, you know, having that actually come across as a logical plot point is kind of...
Well, I mean, we loved the way that the rave had looked in, you know, in season one.
Season two.
Good Lord. Yeah. Okay, I've been here from the beginning. I was an editor, so I've been doing this from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So my seasons get very confused at this point. I know what we've done. I just don't remember what order we've done them in. We loved the way the rave looked, and... We did want to, we still try to remember that they're teenagers sometimes, you know, and we wanted to do a party. Plus the loft.
We wanted to do a Halloween party.
We did. And we didn't want to, we wanted to do it slightly different.
You wanted to do not costumes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And everyone was not bummed, but a lot of fandom was like, oh, who would everyone dress up for Halloween? And then you punked all of us by not having any costumes.
But every show that does I'm a huge Buffy fan, right? And, to me, they did the ultimate costume thing where they became the costume, right? Yeah. It influenced their whole character. And I love that episode, but we didn't want to fall into that type of thing. We wanted to do something new and different. And we knew Russell was directing that, and he just, like, I mean, Russell did all the 80s videos, you know, all the music videos, and we thought, like, a Blacklight Party and Russell. I mean, that...
And like, it sounds like the kind of thing you take your shirt off in.
Yeah.
It's
very high priority.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful, like,
merge
for, like, MTV. Like, it's the perfect MTV thing.
Yeah.
But you guys, like, brought substance to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could have so much less substance than it did, if you know what I mean.
It was a tough... The toughest thing about that episode to do was, like... We plotted the whole mystery, but, like, well, Derek's loft is just one room, guys. I mean, like, it's a big set.
We were thinking.
Like, it's hard to... And besides the fact that it's we did it during a heat wave in August.
It was 100 degrees.
We had, I don't know, how many extras all covered in body paint.
There was 40. Yeah.
So you blast loud.
You had 80 people in that room. You didn't have like a bigger version of it or something.
The what?
It was the current set for Derek's loft. Yep. It wasn't.
No, it wasn't bigger. We can't afford to have a bigger version.
No, that was the hardest episode to shoot.
It was, and people like. I mean, if there was going to be a mutiny, it was going to be on that set. The fact that we got through that means I think we can get through anything.
Because,
I mean,
so much bigger on screen.
It does, doesn't it? Yes. Yeah.
Movie magic.
Yeah. I know, but I still want to live there.
Yeah.
Probably have to put a bathroom in.
Probably.
Running water. Maybe a kitchen.
All right, so what else do you guys want to know?
I want to know who y'all's favorite character is to write for. If you have, or, like, I don't know if it's in the past or in the future.
Or
like
interact, or...
Yeah.
I mean, Peter gets the meanest lines, so he's always pretty funny.
favorite.
I don't know. They all have their own things. We really like Malia this year, and we hope you guys like Malia too. She's learning how to be human.
She's like blunt and like Anya-esque, right, from Buffy, like.
Yeah, sort of.
You made that comparison
yesterday.
Within.
Oh. It's what I said on the podcast as well. I'm like, I want her to be like. Like a female Sheldon Cooper-y style doesn't know how to like society and be that like, because you don't really see that with female characters very often. You have like Sherlock and all these different characters that are men who get away with like that weird bluntness, and people love those kind of characters. Females very rarely get it. And I was like, I think that's what Malia's going to be in season 4.
Like, yeah,
well, Lydia does. Lydia's a little of that too. And so,
she's not blunt. Like,
no, but the point is everyone's really funny this year. it's really great to write for everyone in the, even the freshmen are coming in are really strong.
And, like, you had Frayed, which had that scene between Allison and Edie, like, Crystal and Edie. Was that conversation, like, something that you sort of came up with yourself, or was that something Jeff wanted in the show? Like, how, like, when you have, like, a really momentous thing like that, like, sort of how much of that is one person's idea and how much is collaborative there?
That was mostly Jeff. Like, we had the time and place. And then, but just her giving the courage that she gave to Allison really came more from Jeff. For me, it was more of a support, a balancing type of thing. But he went very strong. He went a lot stronger with Victoria than I would have gone.
Oh, yeah. What, like harshness-wise or like...
Yeah. And I guess her character is pretty harsh. So, you know... It comes.
I always took it to, not to interrupt, but I always took it as a daughter interpreting her mother. And so it's.
Like her idea of her rather than what she's really like.
Right.
So it's hung off a little, Mina, because you always see your mother as your voice critic.
Yeah.
As a female?
I guess I was looking at it as how did her death change both of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I actually love the way it came out. So.
It's an awesome episode as well. Yeah. So
that's the bus one, right?
The best one ever.
Yeah,
the bus one though. Right?
Oh, the bus one. Yeah.
Yes.
That's the best one.
But that scene in that scene with the threading the needle is I love that. Scene.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't there a question we always wanted to ask about that? Oh, about starting the fight, whether it was on purpose. What was the thing we had about that?
Oh,
do you remember?
In the mall?
No.
In Frayed, in the bus episode, when Lydia goes out to stop them, to like stall them, and I think Ethan and Isaac are fighting.
Did she start the
fight on purpose to stall them, or was that a coincidence?
No, it was in my interpretation, that is more of a coincidence.
Yeah.
It's Isaac boiling over.
Yeah, we thought she might have purposely like sparked it to stall them, if you know what I mean. Yeah, but we were never sure, but yeah.
Ladies, I have to run.
No, totally.
I'm flying to Canada tonight.
Oh, good luck. Have fun with that. Thank you very much for...
Yes, thank you.
Have fun at Teen Wolf Con or whatever it's called.
He cares so much. Thank you.
And,
take one of these.
Sure.
That's, yeah, if you... It's a contact card.
Oh, we have contact cards?
Yeah, this one's mine, so like...
I'll send a postcard from Canada.
Cool.
No, thanks for supporting our show. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Have fun tripping LA.
Hey, enjoy your 3 days of freedom because the last you're going to see for a long, long time.
Yeah, I can imagine. Nice. Some good places to eat in LA. They're
we're like stuck at the hotel at LAX. But like,
which hotel?
The one that Con's going to be at, so the Four Points at Sheraton.
Oh, okay. You're
down there. Are you coming down for the writer's panel? Or
it's really early.
Come on. We've got free food and stuff.
Is there free alcohol?
Yeah.
No, but there's a brewery.
It's 10 a.m.
There's 110 bars, 110 beers in their brewery there.
You have to realize that besides Jeff, you two were the ones I wanted to meet the most.
Aww. Oh,
and so, the first people I saw,
and
I was like,
I'm done. Let's go. Yeah, like.
Yeah, I was like, nice. Yeah.
You guys, there's not a whole lot of eat down that area.
Yeah.
It's,
we're gonna have to Uber it. We could get some other parts of town.
Yeah. It's fine. It'll be okay.
We'll still have fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
Courtney, I feel like you owe me, like, some beignets or some
gumbo.
It was gumbo. That's what it was.
I ate a Mickey beignet yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, I had a Mickey beignet.
I was like, I don't know what a beignet is, but I'm eating it.
Beignets are amazing. Though Australia... Every time my friend Byron comes over, we have to take him to In-N-Out Burger so we can have a thick shake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like Australian milkshakes.
No,
they're really
they're
different.
The worst.
No, I like them.
Like milk and some syrup and like there's no...
I like them being thin and frothy. I don't like thick shakes, but whatever, it's fine.
I love Australia. Don't get me wrong. I had a great time there, what I remember when I was sober. However, for the year that I was there. But the shakes, and there was no salad dressing ever. And I'm like, this is not salad. This is just lettuce.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm really sorry about the salads and the shakes.
We should apologize for your entire
personally.
Sorry. I'll get right on that for next time you come back. I mean, what you guys sort of, you said you started here as an editor.
I've been editing on the show since the pilot. Not the pilot, when they redid the pilot. Like episode one, I did... I think 7 of the first 12 or something.
Yeah.
I at least touched them. Sometimes people started them, but I finished
them. Okay. And is that like editing the film or editing the script or like?
Oh, no. I was the editor. I edited I did not write until season 3.
Okay.
I edited season 1 and 2, and then I wrote and edited season 3.
And you still editing as well?
I'm not. The last one I did was Echo House.
Oh, cool.
Was my last editing.
Yeah, I think I knew that.
Oh, cool. I mean, how did that progress? Like, did you write for another show, or was it just something you wanted to do?
No, I've never written for another show. I mean, I was always writing. Editing is kind of like writing in a weird way. I mean, we get the last pass of the script, but I did reality television for a long time, and that is writing.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays there's a little more writing in reality, but when I did most of the shows I worked on, like Top Model and Making the Band, we didn't write it. We got a bunch of footage, and you would sit and stare at 100 hours of footage, and you'd find your
story. Put it together, yeah.
You write it, and I'd write it in the Bay. I just really had always wanted, and when I moved over to scripted television, which was on Teen Wolf, I just really wanted to write.
Cool.
And I gave Jeff a script, and he gave me and my partner an opportunity.
Was it a script that was ended up being one of the stories?
No. I gave him just a different feature I'd written.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just wanted to make sure that, you know.
You knew what you were doing.
Tell a story.
Yeah.
No, and then wrote, you guys can tell me the title of it, episode 304. Has the motorcycle in the hallway with Isaac.
Oh.
Oh, I just watched it.
Sorry, I'm terrible.
No, it's fine.
That wasn't Firefly, right?
No,
that was 3. Why do I remember that? Oh, it's amazing.
I'm bad.
That's the one where the
children Unleashed.
Right? Unleashed.
Unleashed.
There you go.
And it was the one before Frayed, yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first one I wrote. And then I was still editing at that time. Like, I edited all the way through that season. I did 309 might have been the last one I did that season.
Which
was the one where you find out the Duroc and Jennifer and stuff.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if Jeff will ever be back. I don't know if I ever had to ask this again. But since you're the editor, you might know. Gina Holden? as far as I know, Gina Harlan was supposed to be in the show.
Yeah, let me talk about that. I think I can. I think
Jeff will get mad at me.
You should have asked Ian, because Gina is a friend of
Ian's.
And you're saying, this is her,
this is her like, mission. This is her Rushmore. Like, this is like...
Okay, all right. Because Gina, you know, Gina was in the Wendigo episode of Supernatural.
I was just rewatching
that episode.
And she was been trying to figure out why she was credited and not there, and just like, this, if it's this mystery. And,
I
like,
feel like I'm over insane.
I think I could talk about this.
Episode. I mean,
we can cut it out.
All right, I'll tell you the story. And, no, I'm going to tell him. And okay. If Jeff says we can't, we can cut it out. Is that cool?
Are we going to see him before we go?
At least that saves our sanity. So
yeah. No, I don't mind telling you guys because I think it was part of a story and it's an interesting editing thing. And I don't think Jeff would be mad at me for telling this anyhow.
Okay.
So in the Icon House episode, Well, there's so much backstory here, but I'm thinking about like Joe and everything.
Right.
Through a process of much discussion, it was decided that Styles would see his mother in Icon.
Yes, that's what we all.
And it was supposed to be not something that Nogitsune was doing. It was actually supposed to be something that like his own psyche. It wasn't supernatural. It was more. His own psyche, like
Allison and Edie.
Giving him a grasp of himself, comfort. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and trying to understand what was happening to him. Because at the time, he thought he was possibly, you know, still going through what his mother did, which, by the way, is a horrifying disease that a friend of mine, friend of mine's wife is basically in the end stages of it right now. And you can read about it on a blog. He has a blog about it. He writes in Minneapolis for the Star Tribune, but if you like frontal temporal dementia and you write like Minneapolis, you could read his blog if you want to know something that like our character is based on. And it's horrifying.
Yeah.
You really lose who you are as a person, and it sucks.
My grandmother had Alzheimer's.
Yes.
So it's, watching her over like 4 years just...
Diminish, change into a different person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then this is something that it can affect. It usually affects people maybe in their 40s, but it's like the only type of a dementia that can affect young people, which is, you know, really bad. So she was written in and cast, and it was Ian's friend. He worked with her before, and she's really, really nice.
She's so nice.
Yeah, she's great, and she's a great actress, and we have... we have that footage. I cut her in. I edited her in. She is in. She was seen. And actually, you guys, you can see her.
We think we know what it is.
When he walks in, she is at a table.
She looks up at him.
Yeah. And it's still in the background. And it used to be a close-up. And he kind of clocks it, but he doesn't really know. And then in the therapy scene, you can actually see people walk by Morel. In the background, and that was her and another person, and Styles is supposed to clock her there, and then later, when the Nogitsune is taunting him, he actually flashes, he's taunting him about his mother, he flashes back and sees those two things, and then actually...
Puts it together,
and his mother comes up and gives him a kiss on the forehead,
and
that's actually a lot of.
And was it ever gonna? Was there dialogue? Did it ever say it was her, or were you just meant to sort of piece it together?
No, you're supposed to piece it together, and this is where it got confusing. Okay, so when you write stories, a lot of times what you put, if you write a book or something, that can all be internalized, and you can really explain it. Visually, it's very hard. And so what we found was the Nogitsune is taunting him. His mother shows up to give him comfort, and that's like where a lot of the crying was coming in. But what it did take away is that he was also supposed to be a hero, and he's supposed to be saving the life of this damaged girl, you know, like this girl who he felt guilty about, you know, Malia.
Right.
And then it gets today, and it got
really cloudy.
It got so cloudy. And I know people are like, no, we want to see Styles' mom, and I get it. I totally get it. And maybe someday we can play with that again. But we watched it, you know, and I cut it all together. And I remember Ian coming in and watching a cut, and he's like, this is really confusing. And I'm like, yep, it's super confusing. And then Jeff and I sat one night and we're like, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to clarify this. Mm-hmm. And so we took her out. And it was hard because, like, the emotional moments, and I know, and Dylan O'Brien was very...
he was very, like, and he was upset about yeah. that because, yeah. like, he had really given a lot of performance and really thought about it, and Dylan's a pro. And, I mean, yeah. he really thinks about this stuff. And he felt, you know, like it was missing, and I don't blame him, but when you tell stories, especially in editing in the final stages, like, you have to clarify your story. And sometimes we do. We call it killing your babies. You have to, in this way, of killing your mother. You know, we had to do it to make it clear that, you know, the Nagitsune was getting, because it's, that's the changing, that's the pivot point, right? That's when he gives in, when he sacrifices himself to save
yeah.
somebody else.
Yeah.
And he does. And he had to give in to the Nagitsune. So that is what happened with that. We were bummed. Gina is great. There's nothing to do with it. It's about storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people would probably be like, that sucks. And that's why there's a billion ways to tell a story.
Yeah.
You
but
know?
I think that's nice now that that's lingering in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's still not, there. Yeah, we just didn't say there. It. Like,
yeah.
you know.
We just need to infer a little bit more from it.
Yeah.
yeah and it, you know, it also felt confusing because it felt like the Nagitsune was putting her in there to torment him, and that's really not what we wanted to say. Like,
yeah.
We wanted
yeah.
to say that
I mean,
he was...
And I think people would have interpreted it that way.
That,
yeah.
that episode
yeah.
is already something that, like, I don't, like... I'm still somewhat confused about, or that everyone was kind of confused about, in terms of, like, a lot of people were like, is this all, like, a dream? Is he in, like, a normal place, and they're making him envision it worse than it is? Because,
yeah.
like, the hospital and the school, like, run in ways that seem very legitimate in real life, but Icon House is a portrayal of a mental institution that's really... awful, like it's like not what
it's not
facilities
what
it,
it's
are like
not
now
not
and stuff like that.
It's a supernatural
yeah.
weird
and it's meant to be
place.
That in
yeah.
reality, so is that like because of the supernatural effects of what's lingered there, like
yeah.
like Brunsky, that character is also never really explained that he also played the Nagitsune, but seemed like someone who couldn't legitimately be living in the world. I loved Orny with
yeah.
I lived Orny with him in the end of the season.
Yeah,
that was
oh my God,
so
that.
Good.
Oh, that they were like in high school. These
yeah,
felt like
it was
they
so
were
good.
High
it was
I love
so
that scene.
Good. It was. So
I didn't have anything to do with that scene. I genuinely, as
it was,
a fan, I was.
We
like,
were just like
oh,
yes,
good.
But it was also. It was also like Teen Wolf does a really good job of usually having these characters that are very like. True to life in these supernatural circumstances,
just
but
like
he
how Scars and his Izzy is portrayed so well.
Yeah, like
Izzy,
all like
yeah.
there's a, you know, surprising amount of realism in
yeah.
a world that's very supernatural. So, but Icon House, like, so what is the deal with Icon House, basically?
Icon is very much that episode. Echo House is very much a haunted house type
yeah.
of episode. It's like a horror movie in
yeah.
that way, and that story's not really over.
Okay,
so.
Noted.
Stay tuned.
All right, yeah. Okay.
It's not meant to portray any realistic mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, the character like Brunsky unfortunately did exist in this world.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that people don't still have that experience with mental health.
Yeah.
Though I still think we have ages to go.
Yeah, yeah.
In the way we treat mental health and things.
I'm a set major.
Way past
so,
the
yeah. I'm a set major.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. Yeah, so don't be like that.
Yeah, that episode really was important to me, and I analyzed it a lot because of that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just something interesting that Dan and I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is meant to be a haunted, like she said.
Like
it
seemed like, because comparing to places, you know, other things in the show that come across differently, it seemed like something that had some sort of outside effect. It wasn't the same kind of thing that Teen Wolf usually does in the realistic portrayal of the world that they're in.
And I absolutely agree
yeah.
with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I would say it was heightened because we're looking at it through Stiles' eyes, and his
yeah.
eyes are not
yeah.
clear
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah, he's being possessed by
yeah.
a really, really bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the internment camp also was not a realistic portrayal of internment camp. It was realistic that these, you know, that it was an awful time
mm-hmm.
in our country's history, and particularly California's.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is supposed to be a camp that no,
yeah.
that was never existed. You
exactly.
know, was after this horrible thing happened, they hid it, you know, and it had supernatural ties and things to it. There was
yeah.
a werewolf in it, you know. So it was fun to touch on the history, but I hope it maybe opened up history for real history for people to
yeah.
look at.
Yeah.
yeah.
To go and be like, what really happened?
Right.
You know, hey, I heard about this in history class and ignored it. Now maybe I should go and look at it. Because
yeah.
I think it's really an important story that. That maybe doesn't get told a lot.
Yeah. Is there any... I know that... what was his name that played Reese? Skylar. Yeah, is there any chance he would ever return at any point? Oh, he said something on Twitter that I was a little bit confused by, but I loved him for the moments. Yeah, because I was like, that seemed very done and dusted to me. But
yeah, he'd be quite old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's a wonderful, he's a lovely guy, and I'm sure that if there were other projects done by Jeff, that he would certainly consider him casting him in something else.
Yeah.
No, I don't think there's another. I don't think
he. Yeah, no, he was great. It was just he posted something online that was alluded to returning, but I think he might have just been.
It might have been the
hopeful
finale party.
Maybe. He might have been talking about. Yeah.
Woo, free alcohol.
Always good time.
I was thinking on Icon House whether you can say it or not. Because I'm still really unclear on it.
Oh, great.
Did so are we. Styles Uh-oh. And Malia actually sleep?
We weren't there.
Yeah.
I mean,
I do not like to, you know, question people what they were doing on that dirty, dirty couch. That's the part that I think everyone should be focused on is that couch.
That's
is
what
disgusting.
I'm saying.
People were like that. They were like, there's no protection. Like, and Teen Wolf,
also not a fit. Yeah. That's not good. Don't have unprotected sex.
Yeah.
Put a glove on, man.
Yeah. Ew.
Yeah. But I wasn't there.
Yeah.
We're supposed to take it however we want to?
I think that a lot of times when you're interpreting story, you should always take it in many ways. Okay. And that's why I'm not mad at fan fiction.
Yeah.
Like I think there's a billion ways to tell a story. And I'm happy when other people take it and tell it their way and interpret it their way. There's no way I can tell people how to interpret something. That's not my job.
Yeah.
I have my story. I can tell you how I tell my story. Or, you know, Jeff tells his stories and we kind of tell as a collaborative. But,
Have you ever had any real, like, clashes that you could tell us about? Like, someone's thought it should go one way and someone's thought it should go the other. God, this is going to sound so bad when it comes out, but my voice. But, coming to an idea and it being a real, like, really opposing opinions.
I feel like your mind's going the same place mine's going.
You go ahead.
Are you going tiny bullshit?
You're allowed to tell how that all happened?
Totally.
Do you guys read Price's blog?
On TV.com, the photo recap.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Price Peterson, our favorite, Tuesdays is our favorite day. Like, get to read his photo blog and he called us out on the...
Yeah, that was like, I mean, collaboration is a wonderful thing, but sometimes it can break down. So you had the idea for the Shugendos girl.
All right, so I had, so we'll talk, we'll each claim our own fault for this. So I had the idea for the Shugendos girl, which would maybe be a ward.
Right. Very important.
A ward against the Nugitsune. Like, if you had it on your body, you couldn't be possessed by a Nugitsune.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so then?
So then we came up with how do you keep this on your person at all times? So it was my idea for the scroll to fit inside Katashi's silver finger.
Yeah.
Right.
Then
Ian thought that it should be in an armored car so we could have an armored car heist because he just wanted to have an armored car.
That's
heist.
What I meant before, like the weirdest idea that you have that you're just like, I'm just going to make a plot around wanting to use this weird idea.
Right. Yeah. Well, so then he wanted to do that and then
Jeff came in the room and he signed off on all of it except the scroll's not a ward. The scroll has
now
to say something. It's instructions.
Which now makes it some... And Price called us out on that. He's like, that is some tiny bullshit. And
we're
like,
I know.
And then Prof...
But also, to be fair, the finger was considerably smaller than it was in my mind.
And then Props, when I was editing that, I saw Deaton come out with this...
Giant scroll.
Giant scroll. Yeah. And I was like... Oh no! So this is that's the beauty of making TV. Sometimes, like, all these different people have different ideas, and sometimes it just turns into some tiny bullshit. I still thought it was fun. I love that Scott ends up biting, you know, Nogitsu Styles at the end. I think it all turned out great, but at the time we were just like, oh no, that does not work.
That had to be the biggest laugh we had in the writer's room. It's when Price's photo recap. He's got Deaton with that tiny scroll in his hand. Like, this is some tiny bullshit.
And I will say that I still, to this day, hate his mother's nails.
I gotta say, I called them the press on nails. No, don't. I did not like that.
You called them Lee Press on
nails. I called them Lee Press on
nails. One of our other writers, Owen, who is not here to defend himself because his pilot got picked up by the CW.
Well, oh, good for Owen.
Yeah. We love him
But
the CW stealing
again. It was his idea for the nails to be in that box and to do the thing where Peter puts them in, which
it's like Yahtzee.
It was so weird.
We should have thought of that.
And like, I think Ian and Owen and Jeff love it, and she called it Lee Press on Nails, and I'm with her on that one. But you know what?
It's kind of weird.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Okay, I want to know. I don't know how much you guys can tell me, but I want to know about Peter in terms of like. There seems to have been a lot of, like, kind of back and forth, like, with, like, I don't think you guys can be like, yes, he's, you know, definitely evil or definitely not, but just with the press that's come out, Ian kind of seemed to say, he's like, I've been told that he is a flat-out bad guy. Was he kind of playing him as redemptive before that, or, like, what, is there, like, a clash of opinions on, like, from, like, writer to character sometimes?
When did Bowen say this? And he is he is evil because he's a Giants fan. Okay. He is just straight up evil.
I think during 3B, like just before the father, like just when you knew he was going to have the kid, like, and he was like, he was just like, I've been told that he's flat out evil now, like Peter. And it sort of vibed like he thought it was like going to be a redemptive character, but I don't know. Like,
she's going to text him.
Please don't.
We've started watching you on AfterBuzz, Ian. I know you think I should have, but I didn't.
I'd have to find the exact quote, but he kind of.
Let me say, I think we're comfortable saying that. I mean, does anybody trust Peter? No. I mean, I know we know he's cute, but
I don't. But like, you talk about Buffy, and like, it's like to me that's like Spike not being trustworthy, but then having a redemptive arc. Right. Like, and I don't know if Ian, like, if Peter is a character that has that or deserves that or anything like that.
I also wonder a lot. Also, because what does that mean for Malia now? Right. Like, is she going to be like? I almost see her as a Peter character. Who's earlier in her journey. Right. So she's not as far gone.
Right.
So she's probably going to be on that knife edge a little bit more than Peter. But at the same time, like Natalie, I'm like, maybe Peter isn't as gone as we like to think.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think all we can really say about that is, you know, Peter's in this season.
Yeah.
And his story is continuing. Malia is also in this season. Yeah. And, you know, there's stories to be told there. And I think they're pretty interesting stories.
Yeah.
We've talked about, in fact, just today we spent a long time talking about Malia. So.
She's definitely the character I'm most excited to know about. Mm-hmm. I think she has the most potential. Out of all everything I've heard from the newer cast, I mean, that's just what I know. But, I love the end, and I love how much is going on.
Yeah, I always tell Bowen that, he's a bad guy. I just tell him that.
Yeah.
Your face, Bowen, you're a bad guy. You're not a good guy. He was on, you know, I think he's on Chicago PD.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm like, are you a bad guy yet? He's like, no. I'm like, you will be. But, you know, that's just me. That's just me fucking.
Yeah, I mean, that, it might have been, like, something to do with that. But, yeah, he was kind of like, I'm a, you know, it just, there was a lot of moments, I think, in 3A, I think when there was a lot of Cora around, that he looked kind of more genuinely involved. And then season, like, you know, genuinely like, oh, maybe I'm actually helping out and maybe I'm not so bad. But then it kind of turns again.
In the shadows. But he met Melissa.
Yeah, like he kind of looked ashamed.
That's true. Well, he's a great. I mean, I don't think he's. I think he's one of our more gray characters, which is fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, sometimes it's fun to play with the gray. You know?
Yeah.
And some people are not all good and they're not all bad.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing that's definitely clear about Peter is he is profoundly selfish.
Yeah.
And that selfishness can lend itself to evil, or it can lend itself whatever.
Direction he wants. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fair enough.
It depends on how you look at that level of selfishness.
Really good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that Jeff says a lot too, is that, you know, you always kind of start off one way and they like making the heroes into villains and then the villains into heroes. And I think that's something that I really appreciate about the show, because that's kind of closer to real life. You know what I mean? So I like that sort of gray area, and I'm definitely interested to see where Peter's gonna go next season.
Me too.
There's a lot of people that just want like Lydia to kill him and that's it. Like, you know, like lots of fandom.
Well, I mean, that's some, that, you know, there'd be some there'd be some gratification in that, truthfully. Mm-hmm.
But,
I
mean, we've got some cool, witty one-liners from Peter. That
I would miss him as a character. I mean, I miss all of her. Every time a character goes away, I always miss all of them. Like, yes. I miss Victoria.
Yeah, I heard someone say that they, one of the interviews saying that they really regretted like killing her off so soon because you could have done like a lot more with her.
Yeah, like, I mean it is. You always weigh that, you know. But her death was so
great,
fantastic, and it sent Allison and Arjun on such a different journey. But you know, like this crew and the cast is very tight, and like when someone goes away. Like, I mean, I love the guy who plays Deucalion, Gideon.
Yeah.
He still shows up to parties sometimes, and we love him. I mean, I just like hanging out with Gideon. He's such a fun guy. And Haley was like...
Yeah. Haley was our first interview for the podcast. Oh, and yeah, she was nailed it.
She's such a great actor and great person.
And she didn't know, really she didn't know she was going to be bad for a long time.
Well, she lied to our face about it. Like, of course. It was literally the week before her reveal.
She was like, she's great. She's, I think she's just a little quiet,
But she didn't get to know that. She didn't. Jeff only told her a couple weeks beforehand. So, I mean, she was going along with it because she was, like, a good person. And Jeff wanted to show. He got really excited about her outfit. So he showed her outfit, and she was like, oh.
I mean, that's something that the fandom kind of takes, in a good or bad way, like the kind of actors not knowing things till closer to the time.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's like a good way to work, like help them stay true to what they're sort of seen on the screen in that moment? Or do you like, or is there stuff you do think is better to like reveal so they know where it's coming from the start, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. It depends on the situation. It depends on how much you really want to telegraph, just because our mysteries are so intricate. I think season one, Melissa Ponzio only read her scenes.
Yeah, she said that to us. Yeah.
So it's like it really depends on how an actor finds their character.
Yeah.
And also, how it ties into the larger mystery. So sometimes it is important.
Yeah.
To say something from the beginning, but others, I think, in Haley's case, I don't think it mattered.
I don't think it would have mattered. I mean, it was more of the fact that we didn't want it ever getting out anyhow.
And
Haley's a great actress. She could have played sweet and then gone evil. Evil without ever giving it away.
Yeah.
Right.
But sometimes it's so that wasn't a worry that she couldn't that she'd give it away in her performance that she wouldn't have. She's a pro and she's fantastic. But Twin Peaks, I love Twin Peaks and I have been to a lot of like talks about it and things and they didn't tell anybody about, I don't know if you guys ever watched the show, but they, there was the whole thing about who killed Laura Palmer.
Yeah.
Well, nobody knew, until the very end. They wrote
They did this with another show in the UK called Broadchurch.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And they did the same thing. The entire cast didn't know who killed the main character. Right. And that was the whole story. The whole story was trying to find out who committed this murder, and the entire cast didn't find out until the day that they got onto set to film the finale episode.
Which I mean, some ways might be so it doesn't leak out accidentally from somebody, but I think also it's kind of fun to you're part of the mystery as you're in the show. I mean, I don't know.
Speaking of Twin Peaks, what's it like having Jen Lynch working here? We saw her working today. Like we met her and we watched a scene that she was doing, so that was fun. David Lynch is. She doesn't know things. She only knows.
Seriously,
sweetie.
Wow. David Lynch is a director.
Wow.
He's amazing.
Super famous.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But he also
so
did.
Much.
He also did Twin Peaks, the television show, which is one of the best like mystery television shows.
It was big.
And kind
Australia.
Of like it's always
When she followed me on Twitter, I had a panic attack. No, that can't be happening.
Yeah. No, me too. I was so excited.
Yeah, it's overwhelming.
She's she is amazing.
Yeah.
Jen is like her dad describes her as having the heart of gold and a mouth of a sailor.
Yes. We got that.
In hers, even better than she throws the F-bomb in there way more than I do, and I fucking say it all. She's amazing. She's just a ray of sunshine. She's just positivity and
always the same. Like, just, a lot of people and their artists, you know, we're over the map, all over the place. She is like always a ray of sunshine, always bringing joy, always right on.
She's
the mark.
A really positive thing to bring to the break.
How did she end up getting involved with this?
Ian worked with her on Warehouse 13.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I mean, cool. You know, and then he was like, "Hey, we should bring Jen Lynch in." We're like, "Hey, cool." And then I was like, oh my god, I wonder if she'll see my Eraserhead candle in my bag. Well, she did, and she was like, yeah, sweet. I was supposed to edit her first episode, and it didn't work out because I was in the writer's room.
God.
Really bummed, but no, it's really fun to work with her. She was here yesterday.
Her daughter is working on the production too, right?
Yeah, Sid comes in as a PA sometimes, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah, she's super cool.
It's a family affair now.
Yeah.
From what I can tell.
Yeah, it's really fun having her.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm excited.
And, I mean, just in general, like, you guys sort of working on the set, how long have you been with the show?
I started season one also as a producer's assistant.
Okay.
I assisted Joe Janier, who I don't know if you guys have talked to Joe yet. But I assisted him seasons one and two, and then I went in the writer's room as a writer's assistant also season two. And then Alyssa and I started writing the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, as a community, as a cast, is there a lot of that, like, a lot of, like, a casting crew, is there a lot of, like, opportunities, movement, like, personal kind
Absolutely.
Of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really important to Jeff.
Like, to have...
help people move up, and, yeah.
Yeah.
And Joe as well. They're, like, they're both very invested in the people that they work with.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we were kind of, people were, about the end of the season with, Crystal and stuff, and we were kind of coming in from it from the other perspective of, like, people not really realizing how gracious that it is to let someone out of their contract if they want to be let out of their contract.
Yeah, that's like, that doesn't happen a lot of times.
Like,
yeah, it's and, such a rare thing.
Yeah,
to see it happen.
Jeff doesn't want. I mean, he understands. Like we, you know, we have a limited time on this earth, and we have a limited time sometimes in this careers and our opportunities. You have to jump on him, and if someone wants to go try something else. He doesn't want to be the person that squashes your dreams. I mean, that's a terrible position to have to be in. And, you know, Crystal was great. Like, we didn't want her to go, but if she, you know, she made that choice and like, he wanted to support that choice.
Which is just the most fantastic thing. And we really, like, appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
as a showrunner.
Yeah, like, we were sort of, yeah, really coming from that perspective of, like, that it was a thing of kind of kindness and rather than, you know, objecting to having the character killed off or whatever.
Oh, yeah, there was no anger in that at all.
Yeah,
it was just
like,
we wanted to do it in a cool way, you know, but, you know, we knew about it ahead of time and wanted to do it in a cool way. Sometimes you don't know things ahead of time.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to just deal with that. I mean, that's the reality of this business. Like, we have characters that are not series regulars. And if they get another opportunity, sometimes we're not, it's what's called first or second position or even third position.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people will have first position on another show. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden we are like, we're going to put this character in this episode. Oh, we don't have them. And, you know, so sometimes I understand as a fan watching a show, and I'm a fan watching other shows, that sometimes I'm like, what happened to that? Why isn't that, that storyline seems like it should have continued this episode. And sometimes those are, unfortunately, those aren't creative choices. Those are just realistic business choices.
And see, that's, you know, that's something that I'm constantly trying to remind people online that this, I know you only see it as a watcher.
Yeah.
You don't see it as a creator.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of business in the creation. And you have to remember that when you're criticizing everything, that you're not in the full picture.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, people seem to take a more, like, a you know, vindictive attitude of it, you know, when it's not that at all, you know.
Yeah, most of the time it's not that.
Right. Most of the time there's a huge backstory.
And there's things that you could never say anyhow because you don't want to hurt people's feelings and things. There's things that'll never be said and it would be terrible to say them.
Exactly, and that's another thing, you know, that there's a whole lot of stuff that people can't say.
Yeah.
And wouldn't, out of respect... And also out of their job, like they can't risk their jobs to say something like that. So the harsh judgment is so unfair when you really only have a tiny, you know, percentage of the information.
Yeah, it's unfair, but I mean, look.
And some of it's fun.
Some of it is fun. And then, but you know, I probably did the same things with some of my shows that I loved. I was probably like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did that character disappear on Friday Night Lights? Oh, the writer's strike. Oh, okay.
Don't even.
I
such a great show.
That was the best show.
That's been for the win.
Yes.
Texas Forever.
Yeah.
Clear Eyes Full Heart.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about Tim Burton's.
No, I won't be able to talk.
We'll be here all day.
We could bring Candace and Kara in. We could have a whole Tim Riggins like conversation.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but it's like you know, I think Jeff has said this publicly a few times. You know, Daniel came to him and said, "Don't please, you know, I want to pursue some other opportunities, but please don't kill my character."
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know, there's doors open if he wants to come back.
But see, you know how fandom interprets that. Oh, you're a female, and you're a heap of male. And that's how they see it, which is so unfair to me.
I bet. Yeah, that's not a fair interpretation.
Exactly.
At all.
I see.
Yes.
But I see every day.
That's one of the criticisms of the show that rubs me the wrong way a little bit the hardest.
Yeah.
Just because, as a woman of color myself, I'm pretty protective of the characters, of all of the characters.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's unfair to look at that situation as characters killed. It's more fair to look at them as actors hired.
Yes.
You know, those characters could be cast. Everyone could be cast the same. Yeah. The story would be the same.
I see. That's how I see it, too. I take it the same way. I'm just in the depths of hell.
we read them, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
No, I mean, I try to keep him away from Jeff. But.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I feel like Teen Wolf is one of the most progressive shows on TV. And I feel like there is a vast wasteland of a lack of diversity on television. So when people see a little ray of light, they just want it to be bigger and they want it to be better. And
I mean, my thing is, like, if people are going to, like, praise Teen Wolf for having the kind of diversity where everything, like, you know, sexuality, race, etc., is a non-issue, then how can they criticize it for the same thing with, like, characters getting killed off, if you know what I mean? Like,
right. We're equal opportunity murderers.
Like, if it's...
I just like killing people, Pete.
If it's a non-issue, if they treat it like a non-issue on the show, but then there are people who are, like, offended that it's never stated outright that Scott is Hispanic. They're like... I'm like, you've seen him, right? Like, they're offended that it's not about the story, like, the story. And I'm like, I'm not sure what your angle is here. Like, I don't.
Well, I mean, people have, I mean, I agree with you in this specific instance, but I understand the anger.
Right? Yeah.
I get it. Like, you look around at media and you look around the world and I get the anger and the outrage. Like, I totally understand it. I think sometimes it might be a little misplaced, but I still understand it.
Sure. I agree with the vast majority of it. I just feel like it should be a little bit directed in a different direction.
Well, Mindy Kaling addressed that recently, too. And
she did.
What did she say?
She said when you do it pretty well, people want you to do it even better.
Yeah.
And we're all trying, and I think we are constantly always trying to improve that, you know. And
I think that's one of the beauties of writing in genre. Is that there are so many metaphors that you can deal with sexuality and race without being so specific about it. People vilify what they don't understand. They vilify the other. And you see that a lot in terms of monsters and hunters. And you don't have to go into those places where it's real because we're reflecting it.
And sometimes you just want to get away from the real. I mean, good Lord, read the news today, and I was it makes me just want to go home and watch something not real.
Yeah.
For sure.
Because the real's hard to deal with.
Yeah.
You have any last questions for us before we...
No, I mean, we're going to see you guys down at the thing. If you guys come down at BikeCon, we'll be there. Hopefully say hi.
Whatever.
Yeah, you're like, it's too early. I don't know if we were meant to say bye to Jeff before we went. He said he might come in, but I don't know what he's doing right now. He was going to the gym last time we saw him, so...
No, we worked out.
Yeah.
We right in there.
Oh, cool.
No, I'm not kidding. Yeah, yeah. Like,
he's just like there.
Oh, yeah, Jeff's really working super buff. And we have a trainer, Tony, who Jeff brings in. It's very, very generous. And some of us take advantage of being able to work out at the same time. And we do rewrite. Like, Jeff's like, okay, so let's talk about Kira. And then, like, he'll do a rep set.
Let's
and
talk about Kira. She is, like, the way you guys brought her in and fleshed her out.
Yeah, I love
and
her.
And gave her this identity. Is fantastic.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I think she's even surprised us how much we love her. I
she's
mean,
amazing.
I was looking forward to that character, and I think Arden has even taken it to a level that I was so happy about.
She's so charming. She's just so, as an actor, she's so cute and charming. I just love her.
She loves her dog.
Yeah.
I mean, and she does the awkward, really nice. Yeah, but also does the...
yeah, our thing about Kira was like when she first came on and she kind of was first overhearing them and stuff like that, and she was like a little bit like emo in her dress. She seemed like the kind of person who would be like, once she found out everything was real, like she's the kind of person who would be nerdy about like mythological shows on TV, and then she's like, oh my god, this is so cool. Kind of thing. And it was just, yeah, we loved her right off.
But so. She seems like the kind of girl you'd want to be friends with, right? Yeah. Like, you know, because she's not, you know, pretentious or anything.
We want her and Derek to be friends. Because we want them to.
Because we think Derek is a nerd. We think Derek is a secret.
Derek,
like,
he's a nerd.
Like, that he's like. Well, he does so much reading and he knows about all this stuff that's like not actually from his life experience. It's just like because he's read all of these books.
It surprises me sometimes how much Derek knows.
I mean,
yeah.
Who knew he spoke many languages?
That's the thing.
I mean, Uriah broke that one.
I was surprised that you was not even aired yet. I was surprised in episode 406 some of the things that he
knows. Oh, that was.
I was like, Really?
All right, then.
Yeah.
Well-read man, that Derek.
and he's always holding a book, and we just feel like, Derek is a secret nerd, and he, like...
Imagine the library in the old burnt-down Hale House that we never got to see, right? I imagine that one room was really a super cool library, because I like super cool libraries.
Yeah.
In my fanfic, it's all about the Hale Library. It's really boring fanfic. I go into this Dewey Decimal thing that'll blow your mind.
Thank you so much. Yes, we will see you guys on the weekend.
You're so great. Thanks so much.
Well, we like hearing that. So
thank you.
Particularly loves hearing that.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Phil, that's Courtney. Cool. Yeah, and we'll see you on the weekend, I suppose.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
So, anyway, that was the interviews with the three writers that we got to meet, who are all very cool and energetic and funny and irreverent, and it's just, it's clearly a very, very fun team, very young team, very mixed group of people, and it's a lot of opportunities. Like, everyone here seems to be given a lot of opportunities, and like, in a really personal manner, which is really cool. So, hope you liked that, and hope we're able to hear more from the set in future if they ever, you know, want to come on the show again at some point. We've left them a bunch of our cards, so okay, well, I don't know, if we think of anything else, I guess we'll record something else for you back at the hotel if we have anything to talk about, but we just want to, that they invited us to do this podcast, by the way. We thought we were just going to come and see the set and be like, hi, nice to meet you, going home. They invited us to come, it was their idea for us to come and podcast in the conference room here. Originally, they were going to put us in the writer's room, but apparently there's too many spoilery boards up right now. We can't see it. So, we're in their conference room where they have meetings. We're not allowed to take pictures of the room we're in because there is stuff all over the walls that's like inspiration for season 4. So we'll tell you about it once season 4 comes out, I guess. We'll do another episode once season 4 comes out talking about the stuff we saw. I guess that would be okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I guess once it's been on the air.
Like we'll tell you about the scene we saw filming once it comes out.
We'll just ask how it happened.
I was really stoked. We didn't get to take a picture, but I loved seeing Lyndon in his sheriff's uniform. That was cool.
That was really cool.
And,
he told me not to take his handies.
He's very, very possessive of
craft services.
We went to craft services and they fed us. It was very nice of them.
Very nice.
Yeah, good times. Jeff's really hyperactive.
In a good way. He's got so much love for the show.
He was so excited about what he was telling us. Again, we can't tell you. But he was so excited about telling us. Like, he was like, you're going to love it. Like, you're going to, like, all these things. He's like, this is going to happen. You're going to love it. You wait till you see how it's done. Yeah. And he was so stoked on, like, his stuff. So that was really cool. Like, it was exciting.
Yeah.
I'm ready for season 4.
I'm ready for season 4.
Yeah, I thought we were burnt out. Now I'm like,
Now we're re-energized.
I'm totally here for season 4. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll probably keep thinking of stuff, but we have to drive back at some point. So we've been here for like a long time.
It's 2:30. It is now 7:40, so 5 hours.
Wow. Hi. Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thanks for putting up with us. So, that's nice. But yeah, it was really cool to do and exciting. And now we're going to go back to BikeCon and have a whole weekend of insanity with everyone there.
Sharing with you guys. And
Yeah, we don't know when this episode's going to come out. Hopefully it'll be soonish. But
so hopefully because, you did approach us and say hello.
Because we have a whole lot of new friends.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll all just say bye now. Like, bye from Teen Wolf Base Camp. Bye from Teen Wolf Headquarters. Like, bye.
Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye. I definitely just waved at the computer.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams, coach on Teen Wolf, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. Unless you're here by mistake and you thought you were listening to something else. And then you can just shut it. I'm seriously, shut it! Stupid, how do you shut this off? Shut it off! I'm sick of this stupid podcast.